Dagmar Herzog's new book, Sex in Crisis, argues that the religious right has co-opted the national conversations about sex with predictable results, and the most significant achievements of the sexual revolution of the 1960s and 70s have been lost in the more restrictive atmosphere of recent decades. It's published by Basic Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Dagmar Herzog, who is professor of history at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, to this show right now. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
You say you found this book agony to write. Why? Because you were brought up as a Christian in the Deep South, and this has something to do with your own personal story?
Yes. Well, I did grow up in the Bible Belt, surrounded by evangelicals, many of whom were far wilder than me. I had the strictest parents in the county. But the bottom line is that after I grew up there, I also was a historian of German history, and I wrote on the Nazis and the Holocaust and the ways in which National Socialists, Nazis, had associated Jews with dirty sex and promised their own followers spectacular and clean sex. And the Christian And the Christian churches were thrilled that Nazis were cleaning up the dirty Jewish sex of the Weimar Republic and endorsed the Nazis for their supposedly conservative sexual politics. And so I was alert to the ways in which sexual politics can be used to manipulate people, and the way in which the Christian churches can get involved in very reprehensible politics. And yes, I grew up in the South, and evangelicalism was not fixated on sex. In fact, almost everyone around me thought premarital sex was entirely normal. There was a difference between those who were technical virgins till marriage and those who were not, but it was a very sensual, beautiful, affirming culture, and was not fixated at all on controlling other people's sexuality. What did happen is that my parents were involved in the African-American civil rights movement, and I have witnessed in my own lifetime evangelicalism unlearning its racism against African-Americans, and I am confident that it can unlearn its homophobia as well.
Well, it's been pointed out that the people most shocked by Bristol Palin's out-of-wedlock pregnancy were liberals. The evangelicals at the Republican convention seemed to understand the situation. Some said, well, we've had a similar situation in our family, and they were heartened mostly by her decision not to seek an abortion.
Yes, well, liberals have repeatedly been caught off guard because they don't really grasp religious right sexual politics, which is a complicated combination of pro-sex, wildly pro-sex within marriage, very enthusiastic, and actually fairly tolerant and forgiving of all kinds of things, abortions, homosexuality, and premarital sex, as long as one expresses remorse and joins in aggressive punitive action towards others afterwards. So they can be simultaneously in favor of abstinence education and saying all kinds of nasty things about premarital sex and then embrace a person when they engage in it themselves. I mean, clearly, Tony Perkins, Family Research Council, James Dobson, Richard Land, all rushed to defend Bristol Palin and to assure people that her mother was not a hypocrite but simply human, and this was just normal life.
Well, it's interesting that in the culture wars, those people and others have complained about the permissiveness of the 60s and 70s, and yet we see permissiveness. Is it this kind of permissiveness is okay but not that kind of permissiveness?
That's right. What we do is fine. What other people do is not fine, right? It's the sexual revolution of the 60s freed people from the hypocrisies of the 50s, right? And gave people a lot more freedom, allowed opportunities for women to have access to contraception and sexual self-determination, but also created a lot of ambivalence. I mean, people obviously got confused about the relationship between sex and love, and it's those confusions and yearnings for permanence, love, fidelity, passion that lasts that the religious right has learned to play on.
Well, there was a lot of debate over contraception at the time, but it seems to me that the Roe v. Wade decision is the most politically charged outcome of the sexual revolution, the only one that people seem to be arguing about today.
Actually, they're arguing about a lot of things, of course, because what's happened is that the religious right has not only mobilized against abortion rights, but also more recently against access to contraception for unmarried women. There's all these pharmacist conscience clauses across the country that allow pharmacists to refuse contraceptives, even if they have a doctor's prescription, to unmarried women if unmarried sex conflicts with their conscience. And the Department of Health and Human Services under Bush has recently made an expansion of those rulings in order to also include doctors and nurses in this freedom of conscience regulation. And there's increasingly a war on all sex outside of marriage in the guise of abstinence education. We are actively lying to our young people across the country, telling them that non-marital sex can cause depression and suicidal tendencies and is bad for your physical and psychological health. And we are engaging in reshaming of female sexuality outside of marriage. So I think it's more than just abortion. There has been a war on contraception. There's also been a war on condoms, both in the United States. I mean, the most recent study showed that a full third of American teenagers have absorbed the false information that condoms don't protect effectively against HIV. And we're engaging in lethal sexual politics in Africa in the guise of charity.
But at the same time, movies have changed. There was a time from the 30s on until the movie code was abolished where even married couples were limited to being in twin beds, and if one spouse joined the other in a bed, had to keep at least 1 foot on the floor. And today, even on prime, on a teen show like Gossip Girls, all of the talk is about sex, isn't it?
Right. So my argument would be that we live in a contradictory schizophrenic culture, which is titillating and repressive at once. So on the one hand, we're surrounded by sexual stim, constant sex chatter, constant sexual imagery, endless sex talk. And on the other hand, our sexual rights are eroding.
There's been a more recent sexual revolution of another sort, don't you think? The introduction of Viagra seems to have completely changed the sexual landscape.
Right. So I write about this extensively in the book. I mean, one of the things that puzzled me was, why did Americans put up with the religious rights attack also on heterosexual sex, not just on the minority of homosexuals, which is what worked so effectively for the religious right in the course of the 90s and ultimately now has shown its latest fruits in Proposition 8 and the anti-gay adoption referendum also in Arkansas. But what was the puzzle was, why did Americans put up with abstinence education and the assault on condoms and contraceptives as well? And one of the interesting things that happened was that the sexual landscape of America changed around the year 2000. And it wasn't just Bush becoming president. It was also that in the aftermath of the discovery of Viagra in 1998, there was a search for a pink Viagra for women. And in the pharmaceutical company's eagerness to market this search, which has failed thus far. Do we know why it's failed?
Yeah, you would think that Viagra would work just as well with women because it involves collecting blood in a certain portion of the body.
Right. Well, some female journalists have tried Viagra. Some women have tried it in Pfizer's controlled studies, and some people have tried it off-label, and some have found it helpful, but it works no better than a placebo. So genital blood flow is not the only thing. There's also, hey, quality of relationship, feeling desired, liking your partner.
Men don't have those concerns.
And also, one would argue that vaginal lubrication functions somewhat differently from blood flow. And there's just a whole lot of other issues at stake. And what happened in the marketing of the search for a pink Viagra was the fomenting of tremendous dissatisfaction. The pharmaceutical companies created a new disease called female sexual dysfunction. It's a hallucinatory entity, but it's come to be felt as quite real. It includes lack of desire, lack of arousal, difficulty reaching orgasm, but also dissatisfaction with muffled orgasms. And so there's a generalized debate out there now. There's a major media spasm around 2003 about the loss of desire. This is an unexpected after effect of Viagra, which is that suddenly also men were said to have lost interest in sex. The libido loss became a national condition. And who gets policed by that is above all women, because they're terrified that men are losing interest in them and would rather, say, masturbate to the computer. And the religious right has been unbelievably sophisticated in inserting itself in those elemental anxieties of the loss of postmarital desire and happiness. That's exactly how they made their argument for abstinence education. They said if you stay premaritally chaste, your marital sex will be infinitely hotter.
One of the interesting facts that the New York Times pointed out recently is that Viagra use increased because of new hip replacement surgeries.
That's really interesting.
I'm not going to go into all of the suggestions that you mentioned. Pornography, which is easily accessed on the Internet these days. Feminists used to claim that pornography encouraged violence against women. You don't hear that argument much anymore. Now it's about degrading women?
No. The new argument is that men have lost interest in flesh and blood women and would really rather touch themselves while they're looking at the screen. And above all, there have been 3 million anti-masturbation guidebooks sold in the last 8 years, since the year 2000, religious right books. That's a lot of books. That's an ocean of pain. They're not directed at teenage boys. They are directed at married men in an effort to get them to redirect their desire to their own wives. Now, you can say some of those purchases might have been coerced in Bible study groups, but I'm guessing a lot of those really were bought at Barnes & Noble, and it's a lot of pain that's out there. And I think what upset me the most, and you asked me at the beginning why this was an agony to write, this is what Christianity has come to now, is that we're basically doing a war on masturbation and fantasy and inserting ourselves in people's most elemental anxieties and fears about marital love and desire.
My guest is Dagmar Herzog, professor of history at the Graduate Center at the City University of New York, author of Intimacy and Exclusion and Sex After Fascism, now Sex in Crisis, The New Sexual Revolution and the Future of American Politics, published by Basic Books. Well, how responsible is the left or liberal attitudes for all of this? Didn't Erika Jong promise us zipless sex and all of the things, the doors that opened up seem to me to some degree have inspired the resistance on the other side?
Well, I don't really see anybody on the left talking loudly in defense of sexual rights. I don't see even any Democratic politicians talking in defense of sexual rights. People are incredibly tongue-tied. There's sort of an apologetic pragmatism around comprehensive sex education, sort of, well, you know, some teenagers will have sex, and therefore we really should teach them about condoms and contraceptives. No one seems able to say, non-marital sex is okay. 95% of Americans have had premarital sex, and most of them in their hearts know it's made their marriages happier. Experience is an okay thing.
Barack Obama has come out against same-sex marriages.
Is
homosexuality now the... You said that it used to be the big thing. In the 90s, it got many of the votes. It's still out there getting votes. But that's no longer the number one issue?
Well, until the Mormons got involved in the campaign for Proposition 8 in California, I might have thought that actually homophobia was in measurable decline in the United States and gay marriage was no longer the hot button issue.
In California, which has San Francisco and,
that's right.
And a lot of liberal
and
places.
And one would have thought that the new war was a war on access to contraceptives and on women's reproductive rights and on female sexuality. But in fact, what the recent mobilization, not only in California, but also in Arizona and Florida showed is that homophobia still has a life. I mean, the religious right was no longer able to determine the presidency in an era of severe economic crisis, but they were able to keep gays and lesbians from marrying.
What is PEPFAR?
PEPFAR is the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, and that was President Bush's signature project of compassionate conservatism. It was putting $15 billion, and now it's been reauthorized 5 years later in 2008 for even more money, into care for those who are suffering from HIV and AIDS in the most impoverished nations in the world. And 20% of the money from the get-go was put into prevention as opposed to care for those who are already infected. And the trouble was that there were rigid rules about the prevention monies because religious conservatives had the say in the White House and were fearful or made the argument that, quote, condoms would increase promiscuity. So they literally restricted the amount of money that could go into condoms. They restricted the groups that could receive condoms, only so-called high-risk groups, migrant workers, prostitutes, truck drivers were allowed, but basically married people and young unmarried people were not allowed to access them, and they cast constant aspersions on condom effectiveness. I would say it's homicidal sexual politics, but in the guise of compassionate conservatism.
Well, now we'll see some change, but also there is a serious economic crisis, which means probably funding for those kinds of programs will be cut back anyway.
Well, that funding has already been approved. I'm not sure it's going to go away. I think that, of course, economy is the highest priority. We have two wars going on. That's a big issue. Guantanamo needs to be closed. There are a lot of moral issues that all this sex talk has distracted people from. On the other hand, sexual rights remain an important issue. The United States has the highest levels of sexually transmitted diseases, teen pregnancy, abortions, and the lowest contraceptive use in the industrialized world.
There was a letter to Today's Times defending a southern county against charges of racism. The guy said, my big issues were same-sex marriage and abortion. And that's the reason, he said, he not only voted for John McCain and Sarah Palin, but he actually prayed for them.
Right, of course.
So is that likely?
I mean, Christianity doesn't need to be this way, and Christianity wasn't always this way. That's one of the reasons this was so hard for me to write, is that I grew up in a deeply Christian household, went to church every Sunday, prayed at every meal, read the Bible every day. This is a brand new fixation, and as I said at the beginning, we know that Southern Christians have gotten over their racism, and they're capable of getting over their hostility to condoms and their homophobia as well.
My guest, Dagmar Herzog, will be in a panel discussion of America's War on Sexual Rights tonight at 7 o'clock at CUNY's Graduate Center. That's at 365 Fifth Avenue between 34th and 35th Streets. On Wednesday, she'll be giving a talk and signing books at Revolution Books at 7 o'clock. Details on our show page at WNYC.org. Her book, Sex in Crisis, The New Sexual Revolution and the Future of American Politics, is published by Basic Books. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.